My fellow snowbirds. Keeping faithful to my 5-4-3 plan, I'll give you a little bit of synopsis of what I've been up to since I left Mesa Hell last spring. I have been with my sister and brother-in-law to Spain and Portugal. I have been with my cousins to Alaska for the first time. And I have taken 2 cross-country drives, one in September, going from Arizona to Albany, New York, and the other in December, going from Albany, New York, back to Arizona, by way of Florida, of course. So I've done a little bit of gallivanting. And that is not a bad way to start off the homily for this Feast of the Epiphany, because if we have had journeys in our own life, today's feast is all about a journey. But in order to get into this, I think the only honorable thing to do is to have a pop quiz. Are you ready? What is the best way to see the Grand Canyon? Hike it. Been there, done that. Don't want to do it again. No, the answer is there is no best way to see the Grand Canyon. Every season of the year, every time of day, every condition of weather brings out another dimension of the beauty of this work of God, a beauty that can never be exhausted, never be fully explored. The same thing can be said of the ocean. Same thing can be said of a high mountain. You know, there is no one way of catching the full reality of these things. And these are just natural parts of God's world. If that is true of the natural wonders, how much more true is it of the supernatural wonders? You know that the church's year revolves to a very large extent on the 2 great Christian mysteries of faith, the things that set us apart from every other religion. One is the incarnation of the Son of God, the enfleshment of God, his coming to earth as a human. And that, of course, is celebrated in the season we're in now. This is a meditation, this Christmas season, and the Advent preparation for it is a meditation on the great mystery of the incarnation. And if we think of the incarnation as a beautiful jewel, what is the right way to look at the jewel? There is no right way. And so the church gives us 5 distinct great feasts of the Christmas season. The first we celebrated in what for us in the Roman Church, in the Western Church, is the greatest of the feasts, Christmas Day itself, the day of the birth of Jesus Christ, the Son of God made man. And that is quickly followed by the Feast of the Holy Family, where we remind ourselves that Jesus was not only born a human being, God in the flesh, but that Jesus learned how to be human. The Son of God learned how to be human in pretty much the same way that most of us learn how to be human within the context of family life. Jesus drew his human values from the example of his father and his mother. He learned the value of work from Joseph. He learned the value of prayer from Joseph and Mary. He learned that the essence of being a human being is compassion, is mercy, is love, is forgiveness. All of these things he learned the same way that you and I learn how to be human in our own families. And then we come to the third great feast, where we focus on the mother who made it all possible, whose consent to God's will as given her by the angel Gabriel made possible the salvation of the world. And so we celebrate the great feast of Mary, the Mother of God. Today, with this feast of the Epiphany, we celebrate the most ancient of the Christmas feasts, the very first one, the only feast in the Christian church that is older than the Epiphany, is Easter itself, the greatest of all of the feasts. But for this feast of the Epiphany, for the Eastern Orthodox Christians, for Eastern Catholic Christians, this is the great Christmas feast, not Christmas Day, but the Feast of the Epiphany, the journey of the wise men to come to Jesus. For what purpose? What do the wise men do when they encounter Jesus? They worship. They worship. And they give the gifts that they can give to him, each of which has its unique significance. They give him gold to acknowledge his kingship. They give him frankincense to acknowledge his divinity. And they give him myrrh, the burial ointment, to acknowledge his humanity and his coming death. But what do the wise men get in return? Did you ever stop and think about that? We talk about what they bring to Christ. What do they receive from Christ? They receive the most precious of all gifts. The Magi were not Jewish. They were not part of the chosen people. Neither were they kings, by the way. They were astrologers, most likely. But they were what the Jewish people would have termed pagans, unworthy of God's consideration, unworthy of God's care, because they were merely pagans. And yet, to whom did God give the ability to recognize the significance of a star in the heavens? It wasn't to the Jews, it wasn't to their prophets, it wasn't to their priests, it was to these pagans. And thereby, God showed his love and his desire and his intention for the salvation of all people. Practically speaking for us, one of the great, great lessons of this feast is how abominable in the eyes of God is any form of prejudice. To judge a person by anything less than the content of his character, to judge him by the language he speaks, or the food he eats, or the color of his or her skin, or the way they choose to live their lives, as long as they're not harming other people. To judge them by any standard other than that of their character is an abomination in God's eyes. And that's a hard lesson for us to learn, isn't it? You know, we Catholics can get a little goofy sometimes because we really kind of feel that if we do the right thing, say the right prayers, that we're going to bend God to our will, that God's going to do what we want him to do. That's not religion. That's not worship. That's magic. Black magic. Voodoo. True religion is taking our stubborn wills and bending them to God's will. And oh, what a struggle that is for all of us, isn't it? Yes, it is. That's what the journey of faith in our lives is all about. How can we become more and more Christ-like in our thinking, in our loving, in our compassion, in our care, our concern for other people? That is a struggle. That is a journey. And our journey in life, just as the journey of the wise men to the manger, is meant to end in worship, in offering ourselves and everything we have to God and to His will, rather than demanding that God come down to our level and accomplish our will. This is the importance of us coming together each and every week to offer ourselves to God, to listen to His word, to be guided by His wisdom, and to offer ourselves to be nourished by His sacraments. Is that what makes us holy? No. That's just the strength so that we can go out from this church and live the life that God has called us to. In our minds, in our attitudes, in our hearts, that we can live according to God's will. And so we celebrate today the journey of the wise men. And we realize that this is not just a cutesy-wootsy story about little baby Jesus receiving these nice gifts from foreigners. But it's really meant to be instructive of what our lives are called to be. A journey to our God where we end in worshiping the one true God, from whom we have received and do receive each and every day the greatest of all gifts, His love, His strength, His guidance, His healing, His forgiveness. All of these are the gifts that the Lord brings to us on the Feast of the Epiphany. And the only gift He asks in return, the love of our minds, the love of our hearts. And so, happy Epiphany to all of us, happy journey to all of us, and may we be as successful in our journeys to Christ as were the three magi. May we so live our lives that one day we may say with Paul, I live now, not I, but Christ lives in me. Amen.